for a long time, we were in a market, just build it and somebody's going to want it.
It's all about kind of fitting the home to someone's existing lifestyle and not the other way around.
What is the right type of home to be building?
68% of people still said if affordability was not an issue, they would be purchasing a home.
The market today is all about end users.
Yeah, and if you own a car, you have to have a place to park it, right?
There's a base level of jobs that you'll never be able to work from home.
Especially, the older you get, the sexier storage is, let me tell you.
Especially kitchen storage.
Welcome to the Rennie Podcast. I'm Ryan Berlin, Vice President of Intelligence and Chief Economist here at Rennie. Today, we're diving into the results of a survey and some accompanying research that we've just wrapped up called Homes of Tomorrow. And that's where we look at how people actually want to live from a tenure, housing type, and design perspective. Joining me, as always, is Ryan Wise, our market intelligence manager and lead analyst on Intel.
Thanks. You know, I'm excited for this episode. It's a little bit different what we're doing today. And, you know, so much has happened over the last couple of years. And I think understanding what people want today instead of just, you know, what they had been looking for in homes is really important. So I'm excited to dive into the results of the survey.
Absolutely. And we're going to get into the nitty gritty of everything in the survey in a moment. We have somebody here. We did not conduct the survey ourselves. We have somebody with us today who's going to tell us all about the survey and what the survey is telling us. The person behind it, Elena Cowley, Rennie's Senior Product Development Manager. Welcome.
Thanks so much, Ryan. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to have you here. Some people who are listening and watching know who you are. Not everyone does. So your title, I think, belies the like awesomeness of your job. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do every day here at Rennie?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been at Rennie for about 3.5 years now, and my job is really just everything product. So that's unit mixes, floor plans, amenities, features and finishes. I initially was part of sales and marketing. I was working really closely with them on like large scale project envisionings and everything to do with product. And then I took a year off for mat leave. I was away for a lot of 2025. And as you guys know, when I came back, my role had really evolved quite a bit. And what I was doing was so closely intertwined with the Intel team now, and especially when it comes to the Homes of Tomorrow survey. I'm working a lot more with the Intel team, diving into the data quite a bit more. I think, as Ryan mentioned, what people are looking for in their homes is so incredibly important today as the market has shifted. And so much of my work is really just diving into those numbers, being able to back up the recommendations that we're making.
Yeah, it's super important because I feel like for a long time we were in a market where it was kind of like, you know, just build it and somebody's going to want it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now for a whole bunch of reasons, buyers, renters are more discerning. I mean, there are more options now. And I think the development community, if you will, is now sort of, you know, is having to look at delivering housing in a different way. It's also not just what do people want and need now, but what is the right type of home to be building? Because we know these, you know, most of the time here, we're talking about at times townhomes, but often it's towers. They might be low rise, might be high rise. These structures are going to be around for 50, 60, 70 years, right? So about the Homes of Tomorrow survey, why don't you tell us a little bit? We're gonna get into the detail, but at a high level, what is it? Why did you undertake it? And how are we using that information that we've gleaned from it?
Yeah, absolutely. So it really started in 2023. I joined Rennie right at the start of 2023. And it was kind of something that I came to Rennie with this idea for. I was really drawn to Rennie because of data. Rennie is such a data-backed company. It's so important to everyone. And, you know, I'm preaching to the choir here, but I love data. I think it's amazing. I think it's so interesting. And the work that I do day in and day out, I'm asked questions of developers that we have a lot of anecdotal information on from our sales floors and our leasing floors, but we didn't have the opportunity to back that up with any numbers or any facts because it didn't exist. So we developed the survey throughout 2023. And at the end of the year in 2023 was the first time that we ran it. We ran it with respondents from Metro Vancouver, and it covered a variety of topics. So everything from whether you're owning your home or renting your home, whether you're intending to purchase a home or have purchased a home within the last 3 years, whether you're purchasing as a primary residence or whether you're purchasing for investment, what sorts of amenities and spaces matter most to you, what your lifestyle is, even asking people, how much do you cook from home? How many pets do you have? Things that are just part of people's everyday lives that are really going to influence what they need in their home.
Yeah. And I don't think we had been asking those questions, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
I
no
think
one
it was
has.
Like, it was, yeah, like it was, we all just kind of like fit our lifestyles and our preferences into, you know, what was available out there. And we've talked to advisors on this podcast too, who've said, you know, when the market was, the conditions were different and tighter, it's like, you might be looking for a 10 out of 10, you might have to settle for a 6 or a 7, right? And so what we're talking about here is using information so that we can deliver 10 out of 10 housing for more people.
Yeah, we're looking at a lot more than just size, price, location. It, to your point, like, it's all about kind of fitting the home to someone's existing lifestyle and not the other way around.
I think market conditions have changed a lot and people are taking a lot more time to make their decisions. They're really looking at the home and how it's going to suit them, how it's going to suit their lifestyle. We also saw a pretty significant reduction in the investor activity in mm-hmm. the survey that yeah. was reflected in our numbers. And so we've got a lot of end user buyers. People aren't just necessarily buying for investment, they're buying for a home for themselves. And so they're seeing themselves in that space.
So off the top, anything really surprising or anything that jumped out at you this time that maybe we haven't seen before?
There are some really interesting findings. There were a couple of new questions this year, and we'll get into some of those really interesting things. But I would say overall, one of the general things that surprised us is that obviously market activity has slowed down a lot, but the interest and the desire for home ownership has not. So we ask everyone who is not owning a home, if affordability were not a factor, would you still purchase a home or would you continue to rent? Because we want to understand, what is the desire for home ownership out there? Are people renting out of necessity or are mm-hmm. they renting out of choice? And overwhelmingly, 68% of people still said if affordability was not an issue, they would be purchasing a home. So while there are a lot of barriers to entry, there are a lot of challenges right now in our market, people really still want to buy homes.
Okay, let's dive a bit deeper and let's start by looking at buying intentions, the who's of real estate. So the survey did show a shift in the mix of people who are looking at real estate, looking to maybe make a move. Can you break down those demographics for us across the buyer set and the renter set?
So even within the buyers, we actually break that down into whether people are purchasing as a primary residence or whether they're purchasing for investment. And then we also ask people whether they have purchased within the last 3 years or whether they're intending to purchase within the next 3 years. So that also allows us to break it down into past buyers or future buyers. Mm-hmm. So when we look at end user buyers as a whole, we saw that was 49% of our respondents, and renters were 48% of our respondents, which was up quite significantly from 2023 when it was 35% of respondents. So quite a significant shift in terms of the demographics of renters. I will mention that we expanded the region of where our survey covered this mm-hmm. time. So last time I mentioned we were doing Metro Vancouver respondents. This time we were also surveying those in Greater Victoria and Central Okanagan. And that may also result a little bit in the shift in demographics, because we saw a lot of our respondents in the Greater Victoria area are renters.
Which has been the case historically. Victoria's had a higher share of renters going back decades. So
yeah, absolutely. So like I said, 49% end user buyers, 48% renters. And what that really means is that the investor segment has come down quite significantly. So it was only 3% of respondents were investor buyers. Mm-hmm. And in fact, only 1% of those were past investor buyers. So 2% said they may purchase for investment within the next 3 years, but only 1% actually said they have purchased for investment within the last 3 years.
How much is that down versus when we did the survey last?
Quite significantly. So our full respondent segment that was investors the last time was 8%. So from 8% down to 3% this time.
That tracks with other data that we've looked at to sort of tell that story, the evolving story of investor participation. So not hugely surprising.
Yeah, we've been talking about this for a while, throughout the data, but this also tells us that investors aren't necessarily looking to purchase investment properties in the near term. So, you know, the market today is all about end users. So what are they telling us that they want to buy?
Interestingly, it's largely townhomes, actually. So 55% of respondents said that they were interested in purchasing a townhome, and 27% said that that would be a three-bed or a three-bed-and-den townhome. So a lot of interest in that sort of middle product, yeah. Not necessarily the condo product, not necessarily the single-family home, but that townhome product.
Yeah, we call it the Goldilocks of housing. It kind of works for the young families upsizing, some of the downsizers. As a townhome occupant myself, I love it. But what it's interesting, like you say, 55% of people want a townhome. Probably there's a bit of looking at trade-offs of affordability there, but on average, it's like one out of every five sales across the region is a townhome. And if you look at census data for housing stock, 29% of our housing stock is attached housing. So townhomes, multiplexes, things like that. So a lot more people want a townhome than we're necessarily delivering or have been historically across the region.
Yeah. And I would expect that, you know, given the scarcity of land, the price tag associated with single family and some of the drawbacks of living in a condo, not for everyone, but as, you know, life evolves, right? And you have more people in your household, you're having kids, and as your needs change, yeah, it seems clear that there is an opportunity there in the townhome space for that home type to grow in prominence. One thing the survey said people aren't really looking for, I think, is studios.
Yeah. Absolutely. So only 5% of respondents said that they were interested in studios, which is down quite significantly as well from 2023. When we look at that lack of an investor buyer right now, that makes perfect sense. I can't think of too many people who are an end user buyer who are particularly saying, I really want to live in a studio, you know? So we're seeing that compact product really, really dropping in terms of popularity.
We've also built a lot of studios already. So there's an existing pool for those renters who do need that more affordable, smaller home.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that, yeah, that, you know, for as far as purchasers are concerned, price point, I mean, we'll talk about it in a little bit, is a big deal, obviously, for all of us. But yeah, I don't think the dream of home ownership was attached to like any home, right? Like 350 square feet on the 18th floor, you know, facing east. I don't know. That's some people that's going to turn their crank and it's going to work for different reasons, but that isn't the definition of the dream of home ownership for many. And then that's impact. I mean, what we're seeing then at price point wise too in studios is that those values are coming down. So actually on a price per square foot basis, we're seeing studio newer studios, especially transact below the larger one beds and the two beds, because I think people, I don't know if they feel, I don't know if emboldened is the right word, but they just feel empowered maybe to sort of, you know, assert their preferences more in a market like this, because there is more inventory. People want that space, right? And the extra bedrooms, whether it's for their family now or because it's growing. So let's talk a bit about people's lifestyles and habits. Elena, you said earlier that we've been designing buildings based on assumptions that we almost impose on them about how people live and what they're looking for. Maybe one example of that is that studio apartments, condos, these smaller homes tend not to come with a parking spot, right? For a whole bunch of reasons or cost reasons. But, you know, I think part of that is the assumption of, well, you know, maybe you're young and you ride a bike or you take transit. Yeah. But what we've found is that it's harder to sell not just smaller homes, especially in this market, but smaller homes without parking. So what did the data from the survey tell us about the whole situation around parking and maybe how it relates to transit?
Yeah, so we asked respondents how many cars they have. And when we look at buyers in particular, car ownership is very, very high. So 92% of all purchasers have a car and 44% have two or more cars. Yeah. So that's a really, really high number. And then I think some of the narrative around renters has been there's a lower incidence of car ownership for renters. And that is true, but it's actually still a lot higher than people realize. So 67% of our renters still have at least one car. And they did, when we were asking about what factors are going to influence their decisions the most, they did put a lot more influence onto proximity to transit, but they're still owning these cars. They still need somewhere to park.
We haven't seen that car ownership data historically, and what we've instead used is commuting data. And what we find is a lot of people own a car and take transit to work and then use the car for the rest of their lifestyle. And this is where I think some of that disconnect comes from, is if you just look at the share of people who commute by transit every day, a lot of them still own a car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you own a car, you have to have a place to park it, right? So seeing buildings with like a 0.3 parking ratio, there's going to be a real disconnect between the number of stalls that are being provided and the number of cars that residents have. And so we're seeing this also like on even our leasing floors, where people are really opposed to renting homes that don't come with parking. They still need somewhere to put that car.
And for our listeners and viewers who don't work in development, a 0.3 parking ratio is three parking spaces for every 10 homes. So three homes would have one parking space, seven would have zero.
Excellent clarification.
Thank you.
For projects that have not been built, that are still being designed and planned. That's really good information. I mean, there are many buildings out there that don't have a lot of parking, and but they're built. What can a developer do, or what do we recommend in those scenarios where there isn't a lot of parking, but we know, we really know now too that it's desired?
Yeah, I think there are some approaches that we can take. One of them that's been really popular in recent years has been car share. So providing spaces for car shares so that people can have access to that more readily. I think some people are also looking at even offsite parking, looking to other areas where they might be able to do some sort of partnership and align with a nearby parking lot or a parking garage that might not be in use quite as much. It's just really being creative and thinking about how are we going to make sure that people's lifestyles are being met.
So those solutions also are notably centered around giving people access to cars and not expanding the range of transportation options, which makes sense because you're not going to Costco on a scooter. Nope. So yeah, it's interesting information that's coming out of the survey on that front.
So the other thing that's been sort of a bigger topic the last few years is work from home. So we've seen some survey data nationally, but what did our respondents for the Homes of Tomorrow say about how often are they working from home, especially full-time versus hybrid? Because I think those are two very different lifestyles.
Yeah, definitely. So this is one of the areas where we see quite a divide between our buyer data versus our renter data. So buyers, 68% of buyers are working from home either hybrid or all the time. That breaks down to about 56% being hybrid and only 12% working remotely full time. So again, full time work from home is not super common, but working from home at least part of the week is very, very common. If we say 68% of buyers are working from home at least part of the week, that means only 32% are never working from home. Mm-hmm. When we switch to the renter side, however, that is quite different. So 50% of our renters are never working from home. And so that makes us really stop and think, have we overcorrected? Mm-hmm. There was so much work from home during the pandemic, post-pandemic, and we all sort of went gung-ho on these co-working spaces and thinking they need to be in every single building. And the question really is that the best use of our space? Are people really taking advantage of that? Are they needing that? Or do we need to rethink that?
There's a base level of jobs that you'll never be able to work from home. You know, you work in a hospital, in a school, at an airport. You have to go to work every day. Like there's no remote option for a lot of
doing surgery.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you work in,
that would be impressive.
Yet. Yeah. But yeah, working in retail, construction, there's lots of those. I feel like there was some like WeWork related hysteria around that whole working remotely, working together idea, which obviously it was a real thing early in the pandemic, but now we're settling back into, it's not necessarily like a pre-pandemic pattern of working because like, I don't have the data, but I would assume a very small percentage of people were working hybrid. Now, that concept didn't exist for most people, I don't think, five, 6 years ago.
But your hybrid needs, like if you're working from home 1 or 2 days a week, your needs for like your setup at home is very different from someone full-time remote.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's talk about, let's stay in the home here. We ask people as part of the survey how much they are eating out, like not eating meals in their home. So my guess would be that like over time, did we ask this question in 2023?
We did, yeah.
My guess would be that people are not eating at home a lot and that's increasing. That's my experience. It's driven by not having time, right? And or like, and I realize I got kids. I'm not the prototypical demographic of somebody living in this region necessarily, but it's like kids activities, don't have time. We eat out a lot more than I'd like to admit, but I would kind of assume that that's the general trend. What did the survey say?
So I'm with you. I've been eating out and getting takeout a lot more recently. Maybe not eating out, actually getting a lot of takeout as a new parent. but the survey actually was the opposite. From 2023 to 2025, cooking at home has actually increased amongst both buyers and renters from around 3 to 4%. So we're seeing people doing a lot more of their cooking at home, eating their meals at home. And I think this is probably associated with just a higher cost of living, higher cost of groceries. People are really looking for where they can cut back on their spending and discretionary spending. They're looking at takeout. They're looking at eating out at restaurants and that's definitely being cut back.
Yeah, like we went through a period of inflation where, you know, we've been talking about inflation being under control for the past 2 years, but price level is still a lot higher. And if you carve up the CPI, and you look specifically to BC, in the last 2 years, so since 2023, inflation across BC is up 8% over, I guess, to now, so call it 2.5 years roughly. Mm-hmm. Food inflation's up more, and food from restaurants is up even more than that. So there's
restaurants
been,
are so expensive.
So expensive.
Well, and the takeout apps too. If you're using the apps, it's that much more expensive. So it is an easier way to cut back on your expenses. Cooking is cheaper than getting takeout or going to restaurants.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so that really brings us to kitchen design, mm-hmm. and making sure that we're not just having these kitchens be sort of secondary spaces. I think a lot of times we think about condo kitchens as being, oh, people are just getting their takeout and they're heating up their food and that's all that's happening. But people are really actively cooking. I think a lot of people also found cooking to be a hobby or something that they enjoy during the pandemic when they were forced to do a lot more of it. And that's really changed how people are looking at their kitchens as well.
I feel like, wasn't there a trend recently, or at least like there were conversations, maybe it was part of, you know, asking the question, how do we keep the price of building down and the price of homes down? Wasn't there like a trend where it was like, let's get rid of kitchens as we've known them in new builds?
I think they've gotten a lot smaller. We've seen a lot of just linear lines of kitchens where it's just a single wall of, you know, basic appliances, a few cupboards, not that much storage. Looking at really small appliances as well, we've got this whole range of apartment-sized appliances. And for really compact homes, that's really efficient. And for people who are maybe not going to be there for a large chunk of their day and they aren't doing a lot of cooking, that can be really helpful. But again, we're seeing these compact homes are not really what people are looking for right now. People are looking for homes that they can live in, ones that are really functional for them. And so I think we need
host
to
more than one or two other people, like
absolutely, and be able to have more than one pot and one pan that they're cooking in. So I think we really need to consider what is a functional kitchen that fits within a condo where we know that space is at a premium but is still offering the utility that people need.
Totally.
On this topic of what people want in their home or what they're looking for in a home, location and price, I imagine, are big influences. I think that's probably where the conversation starts for almost all of us.
Yeah.
In fact, it'd be so odd if that wasn't a part of your initial decision making. But after that, and I assume that's great, after that, you know, what are the things that people care about?
So 97% of people say that price is the most important factor when they're looking at a home, whether they're going to purchase it or rent it. I don't know what the other 3% of the people are doing for a living, but 97% of people say that that's their main focus. But yeah, putting that aside, price and location being the top two things. Beyond that, it really is, like we just said about kitchens, storage space is really top of mind for a lot of people, renters. Yeah.
The older you get, the sexier storage is, let me tell you.
Especially kitchen storage.
Yeah, absolutely. Kitchen storage, closet storage too is a really big thing. Yeah. So those are two of the big spaces. And then outdoor space is also really important. And we can see this also when we break it down by age groups. Certain age groups are really prioritizing storage. Some certain age groups are really prioritizing outdoor space. But overall, those are sort of the three areas that resonate the most with people.
Right.
So within the kitchen, I am a big fan of kitchen islands. I know there's a discourse there. I love a big kitchen island, especially with stools on the back. A lot happens in our kitchen where someone's cooking dinner, kids are doing homework, like all that kind of stuff. What did the responses tell us about kitchen islands? Am I in the minority or not?
You are not. So this is a perennial debate. Congratulations, you are in the majority. 60% of people said that they would prefer to have a kitchen island with stools. Mm-hmm. And this is particularly important when we think about condo product. Again, we know that these small spaces, we're seeing a lot of homes designed with like an L-shaped kitchen that has just this open space for a dining table, and the thought is that it allows people to sort of have more flexibility and organize their home how they want to, whether they're putting a dining table there, whether they're putting in their own sort of movable temporary island. But overall, people are still in favor of an island. So 60% of people would rather have that. I think it's also, when we think about how people are gathering these days, we have a lot less sort of formal sit-down dinner parties. We have a lot of just sort of congregation, and the island is always the place for that.
Yeah. And it's great for storage too.
That's absolutely
true. Within island storage?
Storage is a hot topic. So we could actually talk about that just a little bit if we want. So one of the questions that we asked people is, would you rather have an ensuite that has dual vanity, so two sinks in your ensuite, or would you rather that space be put towards the bedroom closet? So just really asking people some of these either ors. When we're trying to make planning decisions about space, and when we're saying, well, do you know, Do people want to have two sinks or do they want to have more storage?
Trade-offs?
Trade-offs, yes. So either ors, would you rather?
Would you rather section of the survey? It was my favorite part.
Yeah. So one of the questions that we ask people is, would you rather have...
Should we all answer?
Would you yes.
Okay.
Let's all answer. Okay. Right. Would you rather have more space in your closet, a larger closet in your bedroom, or would you rather have a dual vanity in your ensuite? So two sinks in your ensuite.
Closet.
Oh, yeah. Dual vanity. There are some times now, we don't have that now. We got like four people in our household that want to use the bathroom. It's kind of annoying. But what's really annoying is not having enough closet storage. Yeah. Lived in homes where I've got like a rack out in the room with hangers on it.
Yeah.
Not fun.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And 69% of people would agree with you. So 69% of people want more space in the closet. I think in reality, the dual sink, it's a nice to have. But I mean, if you've got a good relationship where you can compromise with the person you're
brush
sharing
your teeth
a bathroom
at the same
with,
time.
Well, yeah. The thing just is, make it a routine. Yeah. It's fun.
I have a friend who, bought a condo in Kits years ago, like 20 years ago. It's a one bedroom. He lived alone. And he had two sinks. So he would roll face cloths and like set them up in sort of an aesthetically pleasing way in
like
this second sink. Cause he's like, I don't know what to do with this sink, right? Like it was kind of a weird move, but as a single person living in a one bed, he didn't need that. And obviously no one asked him.
Yeah, apparently not. People need space for the clothes they have. A closet is also going to be probably where you're storing linen, where you're storing bedding, all of those sorts of things. I mean, his solution was to store his linen in the second sink. But that's for most people, I think having that closet space is going to be really important. And this is actually even more important when we look at renters. So 76% of renters said that that was their preference as well, to have more space in the closet.
Okay, what's the next would you rather question for us?
The next question is a little bit different. We framed it differently. We asked people, out of these four organizational features, what would you rather have? So one was kitchen drawer organizers for your utensils, one was closet organizers, one was an entry niche, so a little drop zone for your keys and your mail and that sort of thing. I'm personally always losing my keys, so that's a real one for me. Or a medicine cabinet in the bathroom. And the one that won out overall for people was built-in closet organizers.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that your preference? Yeah. Wise, what about you?
Yeah, probably the same, but kitchen close behind the niche, medicine cabinet being last.
Yeah. So, and that was really interesting as well, is that overall those closet organizers won out. But when we look specifically at renters, 21% of them said that medicine cabinet was their preferred feature. And that's a really inexpensive solution to be able to provide them with more storage. So 9% of buyers said that that was their preferred. It was actually the lowest ranking one for them. 21% of renters said medicine cabinet wins out. So clearly a really, really strong drive towards these thoughtful, small inclusions of storage spaces for renters.
You also asked about trading off space in the bedroom versus the living room.
So that was one of the questions that we asked both in 2023 and again in 2025. It's been pretty consistent. 71% of people said that they would prefer to have more space in the living room. So I think that makes sense. We'd all love to have a larger bedroom, I'm sure, and have my dream is to have a little stool at the end of my bed. That's when I know I'll have made it, is when I can have a little place for my blanket to go at the end of my bed. But when you're making trade-offs, living room space is going to win out.
So one more that I have strong opinions on myself is either the inboard den or the flex space, the no window extra room is probably a workspace for a lot of people versus the larger living room. So I'm team larger living room. What did the results say?
Overwhelmingly, people are also team living room. So 84% of people said that they would much rather have more space in the living room to just have that flexibility to lay out the space how they want to, as opposed to having an enclosed inboard den. And I think that makes sense. We do look at those spaces as potential working spaces, but I think some people would rather just have a desk off to the side in their living room, have more access to natural light, have just kind of a more enjoyable area to be spending their day if they're working from home. I think as long as we're making sure that we have enough storage for people, those enclosed dens are really not actually giving them the utility that we think they are.
Yeah. You know, there was a time when I lived in a small apartment, almost big by today's standard. It was 590 square feet. It was a one bed. And we had this inboard den. And I actually was attracted to it at the time because I was like, oh, sweet. There's an enclosed space where we can work. And that was a time of like most people, if you had a computer at home, it was a desktop, right? It's like this big clunky setup. And so it was like, yeah, I don't want that on display. And I like the idea of like, okay, if I wanted to, I can close the door and have a dedicated workspace. No window. We had the cat's litter box in there too. Like I never wanted to be in there, right? But the way people work today is they're very mobile. Sometimes you got, you know, Netflix on in the background. Like, you definitely want the natural light. So it makes sense that, when we don't know going back, you know, 20 years how those views have evolved, but I imagine that they have on how people want that space delimited in light of how they think they're going to use
it. And we said earlier that most people aren't working from home full time. So if you're only working from home a little bit of time, you want that space for other things too.
Yeah, absolutely. And that allows a lot more flexibility. If you're dedicating this one space to work from home, it's really not working for you the majority of the week if you're not actually fully remote.
So finally, let's talk about amenities. Most, not all, but most buildings come with some set of amenities, shared spaces with different functions that occupants, owners, renters can use. You hear about the ones that are kind of like a bit off the wall, like the bowling alleys, movie theaters, although those theater rooms are actually like fairly common, I would say. But what are buyers and renters actually looking for, right? This is really important.
Absolutely. So this was consistent, again, from 2023 to 2025. Number one amenity was the gym. Everybody wants a gym. It's actually like, really, it's not even a competition. Gym is number one. Everything else is significantly below.
Is that aspirational?
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination of money savings and time saving, right? You can just go downstairs and work out. You don't have to walk or drive to the gym, in theory.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not there, you're not going to use it. And I guess the idea is, I mean, I've been there too. I'm like, oh, yeah, there's a gym, great. And I would go once a month. But when I was there, I was appreciative that it was there.
Absolutely. But I think if you, again, cost of living is so high, and if you think about looking at your rent payments or your mortgage payments, and you're trying to factor all of the things into it, you have a gym there, you can go, oh yeah, that's one box that's already ticked off. I don't have to worry about that.
Right. What else beyond a gym?
So unfortunately, the fun golf simulators, the bowling alleys, the cool things that we've been seeing emerging right now, they just aren't really hitting with people in the way that sort of basic amenities are. So what was really interesting was that this time around, and especially for renters, we see this sort of desire for a best of the basics approach. So gym, number one, entertaining spaces, outdoor spaces, those are really the things that people are looking for. Now, a pool has always ranked very highly. Again, people don't necessarily actually need a pool or use a pool.
I would imagine renters would be more on board with a pool than owners, because you just see the dollar signs you're an owner.
Yeah. And I think it's something aspirational for a lot of us. And it's one of those things that you see on a tour and you think, oh yeah, I'm going to use that so much. I lived in Chinatown in an apartment for a little while and there was a pool there and I was so excited. I think I went twice.
When you're an adult and you're not doing lane swimming, what
just
are you
frolicking
doing?
In the water.
Right. It's like, yeah, we want to be using the pools the way we did when we were kids, but the reality is we don't.
But what is really interesting too is we can look at other wet amenities that are also kind of attractive to people. So things like hot tubs, steam room, saunas, those are really important to people as well. And I think they have that same sort of wellness element and they give people that same sort of idea of like having the spa that's accessible in their home, but it's not that significant investment that's then going to be impacting their costs at the end of the day.
So fewer niche amenities.
Fewer niche amenities.
Niches.
More entry niches.
Back to basic, back to boring, right? Like if people want function.
Absolutely. But I don't think it has to be boring. And I think that's our real challenge moving forward is that if we're saying a gym is the number one amenity, what can you do with a gym that actually meets what people are looking for? Right. And how can you make that space somewhere that people want to spend their time, right? We've seen developers trying out new things like putting in a heavy bag for people to do boxing, putting in turf to be able to do sort of more like sled pulls and all of those sorts of things. So it doesn't need to just be a set of cable machines and some dumbbells and a bench and some treadmills. You know, we can do something that's a little bit more interesting and is really going to be attractive to people.
Awesome. Well, this was a very different episode for Ryan and I to be a part of. I really enjoyed it because the information, the focus of this, the information that we're discussing is so different from just looking at the market and how it's moving. It's really getting down to people. Ultimately, real estate comes down to people. There's just a ton of really practical, actionable information coming out of this survey. Elena, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It was so fun to be here and get into the nerdy data about products.
Well, you came to the right place.
You did. If you're watching this episode on YouTube, there's a link in the description to a white paper that gives a really comprehensive overview of all of the data in the Homes of Tomorrow survey that we discussed today and more. So you can check that out. If you're listening, you can go to rennie.com/intelligence and check that report out there.
Thank you for joining us on the Rennie podcast. If you'd like to learn more or to subscribe to intelligence updates, go to rennie.com/intelligence.